Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. What influences people's career choices? After interviewing hundreds of people here on Career Buzz and thousands more in our career counseling practice, I'm always amazed at how diverse and surprising those influences are. Today on Career Buzz, we explore career-clinching influences, from meeting world leaders to working alongside dad to becoming a military officer. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles. We help people make career and life choices aligned with what really matters. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz, and thanks for tuning in this morning. Do what you're good at was the career-clarifying advice that Matthew Held, CEO of Manawa Networks, acted on when he dropped career plan A as a digital artist and plan B as a computer engineer and instead built a career and a company in IT consulting. Stay tuned for our second interview this morning and hear how Matt synthesized influences as diverse as meeting Bill Clinton and Jean Chrétien to working alongside his father in the painting contractor business to develop a unique approach to IT consulting. Where might future business leaders build top-notch leadership skills to confront stress and ambiguity with decisiveness, clarity of purpose, and calm and rational thought? Well, MBA candidate Benjamin Gould built top-notch leadership skills, plus he received full support for his undergrad degree as an officer in the Canadian Forces. Coming right up, Benjamin's journey from basic training to business school. Benjamin Gould, welcome to Career Buzz.
Hi, Mark. Thanks very much for those generous comments and for having me on air.
So what do you like about, well, your education and your career these days?
Well, I'm just starting out my private career with Barclays Capital right now, and I'm very much enjoying it. I'm very much enjoying the opportunity to sort of blend a lot of the skills that I kind of developed as a military officer and employing those these days, just getting my start in the world of banking.
So before we find out about the military background, can you just say a little bit more about what you are doing right now? What is the job that you have at Barclays?
So I'm an investment banking associate. So investment banks are in the business of trying to raise money for different types of organizations, such as companies. And so as an associate, your job is to support the senior leadership by building financial models, doing company analysis, doing a lot of the legwork that needs to be done in order to support these types of transactions. So it's a pretty broad array of skills required, and
yes,
that's really the aspect that I enjoy about it. I enjoy following the current trends in the market, and so it brings a lot of those skills together.
Now, you're also doing an MBA. I think this is, what, the midway point for you?
That's right, yeah. So the program at the University of Toronto is 2 years long. And so the first 8 months, you've got two school terms. And then in the summer period, you have a work term. So right now, I'm going through my work term right now. And then in the fall, I'll go back to finish my last 8 months of the program.
And how have you liked your first year of business school?
It's been an incredible experience. A lot of really great people. It's really an opportunity to combine, again, a lot of the skills that I learned as a military officer and really get a firm foundation of you know, business principles. And so now the opportunity to sort of apply a lot of those financial and strategic concepts that you learned over the past 8 months here at Barclays is, I've been pretty fortunate, so it's been great so far.
Now, not everybody would see the connection between a military background and then finance and business leadership. So take us back. How did the idea of joining the Canadian Forces come about in your life?
Well, for me, I grew up in Southern Ontario. So, the military wasn't something, especially in the late 90s, the military was not something that was at the foreground, I think, of nearly as much so as it is today. But for me, I really enjoyed academics growing up, but I also really enjoyed playing sports, and I knew I wanted to do something that allowed me to travel, allowed me to build sort of my leadership skills. And I knew I also wanted to serve at some sort of level in terms of for the country. And so when the military opportunity came and I started to learn and gain more information about it, it really seemed a way to blend all those things together. And the military gave me a great opportunity to study at the University of Waterloo, sort of like the business finance concepts that I was interested in, and at the same time as pursuing my skills development as an armored officer.
What is the deal? Like, many listeners may not be familiar with this. Somebody may think, well, you have to go to RMC, Royal Military College, if you're part of the Canadian Forces. So what's the deal where they support you in your undergrad and you went to the University of Waterloo? How does that work?
Yeah, so normally most people go to the Royal Military College, but there is a capacity at the military college. And especially if you want to study a program that isn't offered there. So my program, for instance, was actuarial science, which is fairly specialized and wasn't offered at the military college. And so because of that, and because of sort of the capacity limits at the college, I was given the opportunity to study at the University of Waterloo. So it's a very similar program. And in the summer periods, you do the same training at the various bases in the country. So it's a four-year process where your education is subsidized. And at the end of that four-year process, you are commissioned into the military, and then you provide 5 years of service after that to the country.
5 years. So that's the deal. If they subsidize your education, you're gonna give them back 5 years paid work. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. It's a great opportunity. As soon as you graduate, you complete your final level of training, you're posted to a unit. In my case, I was posted to Petawawa. And as a 20, 22, 23-year-old, you get the first opportunity to really lead in a work environment where you're responsible for, you know, a team of up to 30, 40 people. It's a fast learning curve, and you've got great people around you to sort of teach you and mentor you through the process. But as a young person, I think it's an incredible development opportunity.
We're talking to Benjamin Gould here. He was a military officer and now an associate at Barclays. And he's talking to us about his influences on his career, and especially the military influence. If listeners are curious about this, we're going to open the lines up for comments or questions towards the end of the interview. So consider what you might want to ask Ben as we talk about this influence of his. And you're listening to Career Buzz here on 89.5 CIUT, and I'm your host, Mark Franklin. So, Ben, what happens at the beginning there? Can you take us through, in case somebody is totally unfamiliar with the forces, what was basic training like for you?
For me, it was like hitting a wall, actually. I had never really been exposed to that environment. I mean, I think I don't have the standard military bones in my body. So when I first was sort of confronted with the rigor and the military discipline, I think it took me a little bit to adjust. But you learn all the basic skills in terms of soldiering, how to march properly, how to handle your basic weapon, how to keep yourself alive in a field environment, and so you develop all these basic sort of military skills that help provide the foundation for the rest of your career. But each summer you go back and you have the opportunity to further develop those skills. So first you start at like the individual level, and over the course of the 4 years, you're given more responsibility, commanding, five to ten people, then learning how to command in a mounted sort of on vehicles, and then learning how to command a variety of different vehicles. And so it's a progressive training environment. And I think for me, the first summer was a completely new experience. But the opportunity to keep doing that over the course of the 4 years allowed me to really build my skills, and eventually I adjusted I think rather well.
It's amazing when you said it was like hitting a wall. I think many listeners who are unfamiliar with it might consider that we have these images of basic training from the movies. Did you ever think like, oh my god, this is way, I've gotten way over my head, I think I gotta bail out?
You know what? I like to put my head down and go for things. I don't really like to allow myself to be defeated. But yeah, it was definitely a culture shock for me. Just a lot of the little things that you're not normally used to. I mean, shaving on Saturdays, for instance, as a high school kid. I remember, you know, I never shaved on the weekends, and you know, here you're working on the weekends, and they expect you to shave. And I mean, that's a very small example, but it kind of illustrates the sort of thinking that your mind needs to adapt to.
That's a great little example. Thanks for that. Now, you're mentioning about the development of leadership skills, and I really want to zero in on that because that's one of the influences here. And you were saying that there's a kind of progressive training. You learn how to lead people, smaller groups, and then it goes up and up. What can you say about some of the specifics that you learned? How was that training given to you? And also, you're quite young at the time. You're in your early 20s. You might be leading people who might even be older or significantly older than you. So how did that work for you?
Well, I think during the university period, you've got these four or five different summers where you're actually progressing in terms of your leadership skills. So I think, looking at it from the very beginning to what you're going to get into 4 years down the road, I think it looks like a pretty high mountain. But, I mean, the military does a great job in terms of progressively building your skills. And so each summer, you learn different levels of command. And the great thing you also learn is you're not just placed in a leadership position, because you're on a course with 30 or so other, maybe 60, 30 to 60 other people. And so each person has an opportunity to command. So you're also learning the skills required to be not in the command position, but in the support role as well.
Right.
So you develop those skills. And once you get to your unit, you're in charge of, you're responsible for people who are older, but the great thing is there is sort of a formalized or maybe an informal sort of mentoring process that happens whereby these more senior people sort of guide you along the way until you get to the stage where you're able to take the reins yourself. I mean, I think one of the biggest things I've learned during my time in terms of leadership is leading by example. I think at the end of the day, at least in the Army, there is really no substitute for leading by example. And that would be my sort of guiding principle in sort of any sort of leadership situation that I'd find myself.
So can you take us into some of the highlights? And I know there was a time there where you actually did some tours of duty in Afghanistan and Sudan. Can you take us into some of the highlights from being overseas, and then how that what you just told us about leading and leading by example in particular, and how that plays out in a couple of real world situations?
Absolutely. So I was kind of fortunate to have the opportunity to deploy overseas twice. The first time was in 2007 to Afghanistan. In that role, I was serving within a reconnaissance squadron. A reconnaissance squadron is normally a group of about 100 to 150 soldiers who are mounted in vehicles and whose job is to be the eyes and ears of the higher commander, to let him know what is going on the ground. And so during that period, I was deployed for it was a normal six-month rotation. And then the second opportunity to deploy was last year to Sudan as part of the United Nations military role that's currently going on there. And in that role, it was a similar sort of role, but it was a non-combatant environment where you're observing and supporting the implementation of a peace treaty within that country of Sudan. So in terms of leadership by example, I mean, one of the ways that at least I accomplished that was, I mean, it's at certain points, although maybe it's not tactically sound, you would, for instance, put yourself in front of your unit when you're driving from one location to another. It sort of demonstrates to your team that you're willing to take the same risks as you would ask them to take. That would be sort of one small example of sort of leading by example, where you're willing to go at the front.
And when you were there having a look at what you were doing, let's take the Afghanistan one that might be really familiar or more familiar to listeners. So it's the reconnaissance squadron.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you were a part of. Can you just give us a flavor for what things looked like from your perspective, especially from the leadership position? What did you see there? You were the eyes and ears. What kinds of insights did you have about the way that that whole situation was going in Canada's participation in it?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest things about Afghanistan is there's a lot of negative media coverage. I think often the things that pop up about Afghanistan tends to revolve around things that are exploding or things that are being different combat scenarios that are undertaken. But every day in the country, there are thousands of little stories that are positive that are happening all the time. And I think, I think there's definitely sometimes it should be a certain amount of skepticism when all you're hearing is negative news.
Can you give us one of those positive stories? Because you're right. All we hear is the bad news, right? And the media just amplifies for that.
Yeah.
And that's what we hear. And yes, there's bombs blowing up. There's people dying. And sure, there must be thousands of positive stories. What's an example?
I mean, within the province of Kandahar, even within the country of Afghanistan, there are millions of young women that have had the opportunity to go back to school in Afghanistan, something that wasn't possible under the Taliban. Within the province of Kandahar, one of Canada's signature projects, I think, was to help in the inoculation of polio. And so that was another project that was undertaken. And even when as a reconnaissance squadron, so your job is to be the eyes and ears. And I was quite fortunate to have the opportunity to really visit almost the entire sort of province of Kandahar. And so you've got areas that are extremely chaotic. At least that was the case in 2007. But then you go to certain other areas that are only maybe 100 kilometers away, and those areas have a more formal government structure. There is a sense of stability underway, and there are better ways to get things done rather than your traditional sort of combat, head to the wall sort of thing that takes place in other parts of the province. And I think, even within any other city in the world, I mean, even North America or even here in Toronto, there are different parts to the city, some areas a little bit safer than others. And I think that's the same case in Kandahar. I mean, we focus in on certain areas that are very dangerous and very combative, but there are other areas within the province that are relatively stable, and there was some semblance of peace underway and process. So, I mean, that's kind of, there are a lot of positive stories that exist. I mean,
that's great. Thanks for balancing it out for us, because we hear so much of the negative news and hearing, like, for instance, working to help inoculate the population against polio. Great story. We're talking to Benjamin Gould here. He's a military officer, and now he's at MBA school and working as a investment banking associate with Barclays Capital on Career Buzz. And I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on CIUT 89.5 FM. If listeners have a comment or a question about what it might be like to be in the military and how that then translates into the so-called real world, give us a call and come on air with a comment or a question. The phone number is 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. So, Ben, what was the career plan while you were in the military, knowing that you had the 5 years, right? That was what you owed them. What was the career plan? Did you think, maybe I'll stick with this and I'll make the military my career? Did you keep the idea that you might leave one day and go into business or some other area? What was your thoughts there?
Well, I think, I mean, for me, growing up and as I entered the military, I mean, I knew that I really enjoyed sort of the field level, the leadership skills that I learned in the military. But at the same time, I always had, an interest in business. I had worked in a number of different jobs growing in high school. I mean, nothing too significant, but I always maintained an interest in business, and something I always followed while I was in the military. And so for me, while I really enjoyed the military, and I did consider it perhaps as a long-term career. I think the opportunity to try something else, I think, was just, a little bit irresistible. And I think sometimes I mean, at least my perspective is life is too short to sort of have regrets. And while the military, I think, is a great career, and I probably wouldn't have any issue staying with it, the opportunity to try something new, perhaps that was something I learned during my time overseas, just to be flexible in nature and not leave anything hanging, because I think at the end of the day, life can be kind of short. So I decided to make that transition, and I've enjoyed it thus far.
How is it to leave? We've talked to a lot of people on the radio show here about leaving various careers, and how is it for you to leave such a, you know, the military is a really, one sees it as a kind of organization where you're in its firm embrace. How is it for you to break free?
It's it can be challenging. I mean, because the military does have its own sort of environment, and a lot of the bases are relatively isolated. I was fortunate to be posted to Toronto back in 2008, and in Toronto we have the provincial headquarters. So that was my first sort of transition from your standard military base and field environment to a sort of metropolitan environment. So that was a great sort of introductory adjustment, I guess, in terms of my lifestyle. I mean, I think you maintain your close relationships with your family and friends, and my wife worked in investment banking, is now working in insurance, and so those were the sort of connections that I maintained, I guess, to the business world. And so perhaps for me it was not as although it's a little bit of a culture shock, there were a lot of sort of cushions in there to make it much easier. And even in Toronto, there's a fairly strong network of ex-military people that have made similar sorts of transitions. And so the opportunity to connect with them and discuss what they've done and learn from their experiences, I think, was extremely valuable as well.
That's great. And if there is anybody listening who perhaps was in the military or is or is thinking about it, give us a call with a comment or a question at 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. So Ben, just on the thing of leaving, did anybody there who you had to report to and say, look, I'm going to leave, did they try and convince you? Did they say the door is still open? You know, what was that immediate reaction in the moment when you made the announcement?
Yeah, the military is very good about trying to retain its people. Absolutely. I've made a lot of great relationships during my time, and I've had some very senior folks try and ask me to stay. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I think everyone has to make their decisions for themselves, and I still got great relationships, and it's not like you're blacklisted if you decide to try something else, because a lot of different people do it, and so it's I think it's in everybody's best interest. And I think even if I think the military is a national institution, and as a Canadian you get trained as part of this national institution, but you're still going to be able to contribute to society, and I think that's beneficial as well. And it's an opportunity to sort of spread to the civilian aspect of society what a great team we have within the Canadian military.
How does the military experience now translate into the business world? How is the military like business? How is the business world responding to your attempt at bridging the skill set that you developed in the military into the business world? Are they similar? Are they different? Are you able to make the linkage? What are you finding?
I think a lot of the skills that you learn in the military are extremely applicable to the business world. I think the ideas of discipline, responsibility, working hard, providing detail and high quality work, I think those are probably all skills that businesses want in their employees. And so those are the sort of foundation skills that you learn in the military. And so I've been pretty fortunate to have a very positive reception from, I mean, I'm just starting my career right in the sort of the business world now, but over the past, I guess, 8 months to a year, as I've made this transition, I've had a lot of positive response. I think the biggest issue is a lack of information about what exactly exists in the military,
yes.
or what exactly that environment entails. I think there's sometimes a misperception that the military is just this extremely aggressive organization that takes no prisoners sort of attitude, and the people are completely irrational and hitting their heads against the wall type of environment. But I think once you get into, there's a lot of different structures within the military. I mean, you have your field environment, which you see so often in the news, but there are lots of other environments in terms of planning, operations, that in some way resemble a lot of what exists in the business world. And
yes,
especially in investment banking, where, I mean, you require people who can do a lot of, have a fairly broad array of skills. I think that's something that the military teaches. It teaches initiative. And I think, at least for, that was one of the key reasons why I decided to sort of make the transition to this industry in particular.
Because you had that sense of initiative or that skill.
That drive. Yeah. I think that's something that we encourage all people within the military to have, a drive to just keep pushing. And because when you're in a field environment and you're cold and you're wet and it's just, you're hungry and you haven't slept in couple days. I mean, those are the ability to just push on and work for your team. I think that's a skill that I think any business should want in its people.
Right on. Final question, Benjamin Gould. Given your personal experience now that you've shared here on Career Buzz, what have you learned that you're prepared to share with listeners here? What have you learned personally from your own story about making career and life choices?
Wow, I think at the end of the day, for me, I think having a solid plan, but most importantly is enjoying what you're doing, and to really, I mean, it sounds very cliche-ish, but to enjoy what you're doing and to have a plan to get there. I mean, for me, I'm definitely I try and plan well. And I think that's, for me, that's been pretty key. And I think also I enjoy what I'm doing, and I think that helps sort of get you up and push you through. I think that's pretty foundational.
Right on. Benjamin Gould, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark, for the opportunity. It's been great talking with you for the last half hour.
Sure thing. Thank you. And we're going to take a musical break. We have Matthew Held here, who we're going to speak to briefly in a brief minute after our musical break. But Matthew, you brought a piece of music with you. Do you want to introduce listeners to what you brought?
Sure, Mark. I brought a track by the artist by the name of Deadmau5, who's a Canadian electronica artist, and it's called Ghosts and Stuff.
Coming home, I only had a taste, but we're out of time. CIUT can now be heard on channel 946 through Rogers Digital Cable.
Like what you're hearing and want more of it? Check out our schedule at CIUT.fm. We have over 80 unique programs we're sure you'll love. We're listener-supported. CIUT 89.5 FM.
We're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before moving on to our next interview, I want to let listeners know the upcoming Career Cycles Cafe is coming up on May 31st at Timothy's Cafe, 320 Danforth, right at Chester or Carrot Common. And come on in, get a free career talk or resume critique or whatever you'd like to ask about your career and improving it, enriching your career and life. Career Cycles Cafe coming up, I think it's Tuesday, May 31st, Timothy's Cafe, 320 Danforth. So we're here with Matthew Held. A high school teacher said, do what you're good at. And that was the career clarifying advice that Matthew Held, who's CEO of Manawa Networks, acted on when he dropped Plan A as a digital artist and Plan B as a computer engineer and instead built a career and a company in IT consulting. Matthew Held joins us here in the Career Buzz studio. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thanks very much, Mark. Good to have you here.
So what do you like about your career these days?
The fact that there's constantly challenges and just that, that you know, there's always something different. You know, it's a very dynamic type of environment working with customers. You know, we work with tons of different customers. So there's they're in every different area of the economy and they all have their own unique item, I should say, that they need to have addressed. And also, too, mentoring our team. We've got a really diverse team. And guys who've got different specialties and in many different areas. So working with them and learning from them is really great.
And you're sort of leading the charge there at Manama. What is it? What do you do? What kind of, I said IT consulting. Just give us a brief overview of it.
Manama Networks is a one-stop shop for anything to do with IT. So, you know, literally anywhere from infrastructure and cabling all the way through to, integrating applications and making a network work. We are an outsourced company. I mean, so companies, small to medium-sized businesses will come to us and say, you know, we need our IT needs handled. We don't want to do this internally.
Right.
And we look after it for them.
And as a leader, a business leader now in this company, what strengths, personal, professional strengths, do you draw on regularly to do your job?
I'd have to say, doing what it takes. It's really what it boils down to. It's all about effort. It's all about attitude. It's all about not giving up and just doing whatever it takes to get the job done and get it done right.
That's interesting. So it's a mindset. It's a set of like personal kind of character strengths that you're describing, as opposed to I use my project management skills or my, you know, computer application skills. Like, you're not giving us those kinds of skills. It's more an attitude.
I'd say it's an attitude, and it's also a matter of perspective. And because there's two aspects, I would say, especially to IT consulting. There's the actual consulting portion where you're trying to help a business owner or stakeholder with a piece of technology and really empower them with that technology. Then there's the technical aspect. How do you deliver on it technically? How are you going to align that technical solution with the business? So it's interesting.
So take us back. How far does your interest in computers and technology go?
I mean, you know, it first started getting the first computer. Family friend gave me the computer when I was 10 years old, and it was playing around on it. I mean, and you learn the hard way.
Yes.
with commands. This is back in the DOS days. But really, I'd say the big turning point for me was at 15 years old, you know, in high school, in computer class. Computer teacher says, you know, if you go and buy a modem, I'll hook you up on this online system. This is pre-internet days when it was, you know, popular for everybody. And says, I'll put you onto this bulletin board system where you can dial up and conference and chat.
Yeah.
Think of like online forums and things like that.
But the early online forums.
The early.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to use your modem to hook up.
telephone modem, right?
Exactly.
Nothing, you know, like high speed internet.
This is nothing high speed, right? And he said, if you do that. So, of course, this was like, you know, run home from school. Mom, we need to go to Future Shop. We need to buy a modem. Like, I've got to get on this thing and try it out. And And the thing was, is it just added such a new element and experience to computing, because now you were actually communicating with people.
Right.
You were sharing. So it was sort of like Facebook of the early days.
So you got the modem and you started to see that there's this big world that you could connect to. What else happened? There was a lot of things that happened to you early on in your kind of high school career that started to influence where you were going in life. What else happened?
Well, I would say, I mean, first off, on those online systems, I mean, I hooked up to the Scarborough Board of Education system, and I met students who I had no idea existed. And, you know, in the school, I mean, these were the other computer people.
Yes.
And they started introducing me and telling me about other systems, because it wasn't just this one system. There was a whole world of, you know, sort of systems out there that you could dial up to locally. And one of them being TV Ontario. They had a system called TVO Online. And it was through there that I ended up getting onto that system and met actually friends who I still have to this day. You know, through some of those acquaintances, switched high schools, went into cyber arts at Don Mills Collegiate, which is an integrated graphic art program, and actually did a co-op at TV Ontario for that online group that was running that BBS.
In high school?
Yeah, in high school.
That's
so
great. So real exposure, a lot of it in high school, where most high school students don't get that kind of exposure.
Yeah, it's 16 years old, and I remember that was with the co-op teacher who was like just thrilled. He said, "You went and found your own job. I didn't have to do this for you." And it ended up panning out, because TVO actually offered me a job afterwards, part-time during the school year and full-time during the summers.
Right. So if we have any high school students listening to this show, what's the advice to them?
Have the right attitude and don't be afraid to ask for opportunities.
Right on. And what else? There was this thing about the G8 Youth Summit that I mentioned on the intro. What was that all about? How'd you get involved in that?
Well, Don Mills was selected as the school in Canada to represent Canada at the G8 Youth Summit. Given the nature and the positioning of the cyber arts program and having some of the technology and things along those lines, some of the leaders of that program headed up a 60-student program to, you know, collect the feedback of young Canadians and then put together position papers and represent Canada at that summit. And I was fortunate enough to be part of that project, heading up the IT side of things. So lots of exposure working with you know, people at now Compaq and the like, and also had the opportunity to sort of flex a little bit of that management / how do you put all this together, those skills, leading those students, and then finally I was fortunate enough to be one of the delegates that went over to Birmingham.
So this is Birmingham, England.
Yeah.
The G8. What year was that?
So it'd be 1998.
And you met some world leaders. Who'd you meet?
Yeah. Well, I met all the world leaders except for Boris Yeltsin, because he was ill. But it was quite something to be at the summit. I mean, I remember we had a 45-minute sit down with Tony Blair. And it was part on camera, part off camera, and then after that there was a reception with all the world leaders. So yeah, I have a picture at home with Bill and Hillary Clinton and Helmut Kohl, the German Chancellor at the time, and I was fortunate enough to meet Jean-Éline Chrétien. So it was definitely it really shaped my perspective of, you know, that level or echelon of public service
And how do you think that, just looking back on it now, how do you think that influenced you to be involved in such a high-level thing, meeting these people? What was the lasting influence from today's perspective?
Especially, you know, just in the area of publicity and things like that, it was that these are real people too.
Yeah.
They're down-to-earth, you know, normal people. This is just as much a job as anything else. It just happens to be a very high-profile job.
Yes.
You know, as well, too, just and leading up to that whole process, it was just, again, lots of hard work, like never give up and just do whatever it takes in order to get the job done.
Right. Which is what we just talked to Ben Gould about. Interestingly, we're talking to Matthew Held here. He's the CEO of Manawa Networks. I'm Mark Franklin, host of Career Buzz here on CIUT 89.5 FM. So, Matthew, there's been other influences. There's world leader influences, but you've also been influenced closer to home. What about your dad? How does he influence you?
He comes from a much more traditional, background and very pragmatic background. So it's not one of high academia or anything like that. And it's just his notion and way of solving problems. It's just, you know, there's no need to get overcomplicated, but let's just drill down, put a lot of effort into it, and you'll get to the end of it. That and also just doing the right thing. You know, have integrity, do the right thing, look after people. I mean, he's a painting contractor by trade and runs the family business. But so much of what he does isn't just, you know, the painting and the decorating. It's, you know, it's whatever it happens to be that the customer needs in order to be to solve the problem.
Yes.
So it's really having a wide set of skills and being able to apply them, when called upon.
So I mentioned in the intro Plan A and Plan B, you went to this specialized high school, you know, digital arts. Let's just see the trajectory now of your career plans and how they evolved. The first one I mentioned was digital arts. How did that first one come about?
Oh, you know, talking about the BBS days, one of my friends, he had a friend there, and he was part of the first year of this program, the cyber arts program. And I really didn't know. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew I liked technology. I had a creative side. I figured, okay, well, you know, this sounds like it'd be really cool. And while I was in my co-op and working at TVO, I started applying to the cyber arts program. And I found out about it through being online. So it's,
yeah,
you know, having this modem started really changing my life and changing the path that. And it seems like such a simple thing. I mean, you went out and bought a small product, yet just sort of going with that gut, doing what felt right, started leading me down this path. So I started with that program.
I think that's, you know, if we translate that into today's world, I mean, everybody is so connected and there are social networks available like Facebook. And it points to the fact that there maybe was a time when people were more isolated in making career and life choices, and that how influential the social networks can be in exposing us to things that we had never thought of before. And suddenly, like in your case, you heard of something that you hadn't thought of, and the next thing you know, you're in it, and it forms your education and part of your career thinking.
Exactly. And I was going to say, I mean, you know, I have to say I was extremely fortunate to be part of that, the cyber arts program and the G8. A couple of the teachers there had won, you know, national awards for their teaching skills and ability, and they really helped to shape my view of just and my way of thinking. I mean, it was and the way that the program was laid out wasn't just here's your straight curriculum. It was you have to do a project, you come up with the project. Once you've come up with it, tell us how we're going to evaluate you on it, and we're going to see if that's fair, and then we'll see how you perform up to those self-imposed standards.
Wow, so it takes real initiative in that case, which interestingly, from the military and from Ben Gould's interview, I mean, he was talking about initiative as being one of the strengths that he really got out of that and how that's valued in the business world.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I mean, and that's, I think that's really what makes a difference between, for a lot of people in their own careers, is just how far are they willing to take it?
Yes.
How are they willing to put energy into it and be passionate about what they're doing?
Persistence trumps talent. That's what Dan Pink says in The Adventures of Johnny Bunko as one of the seven key lessons of your career. Persistence trumps talent. Would you agree?
I'd completely agree, and I do know that I think as well too. Einstein's got something along the same lines where creativity trumps just, you know, raw. He's got a quote to it, but just trumps that whole raw natural,
yes,
you know, IQ. You know, EQ is almost more important than IQ type,
yes,
of thing. So, and I completely agree about that, because at the end of the day, you know, you can be the smartest person, but if you're on that one track mind and aren't looking to, you know, to broaden the horizons, or if there's, you know, sort of a lateral way of thinking or,
yes,
dynamic way of thinking, you know, it's I think it's hard to move ahead because you don't necessarily see the opportunities that are there for you.
Exactly. So what happened with Plan A? Plan A was the digital artist career path. What happened to it?
Well, Plan A, I went through it, and I mean, I decided at one point in time that that wasn't where I necessarily wanted to go. I thought I was looking at where the market was moving, and I said, you know what? Yeah, I want to do something a little bit different, and I also wanted to go out and prove something, which was, you know, sort of what led into Plan B, the computer engineering adventure. So I mean, it was a matter of just thinking about things and looking at the market and also strengths. And it wasn't for lack of ability. I mean, I will say I'm not the traditional fine artist, But, you know, when I'm behind a computer and design-wise, I can apply those principles and be successful with it.
So just to understand the shift towards computer engineering, you felt like you wanted to accomplish more. There was going to be something that was a kind of a real sense of accomplishment had you finished the computer engineering degree?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I always wanted to take on the hard challenges.
Yes.
I always wanted to sort of prove myself. Computer engineering at the time, this was in the late 90s, and, you know, computing technology, you know, there was the dot-com boom that
Yes.
was going on, and so I said, oh, this is, you know, where I need to be. And I looked at it, and I was, you know, strong in, you know, the maths and sciences at the high school level, and said, okay, this is how I'm going to approach it. And there was also a certain amount of, you know, I'm going to go and take on the hardest thing I can take on.
Yes.
So.
And listeners would relate to that. Sometimes we get motivated or let's say, influenced by certain desires, and it's this challenge or prestige sometimes you hear. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I don't know what it is. It's a one-track kind of motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't work. What happened in your case? What happened to Plan B?
Well, so Plan B, I mean, I get accepted to Waterloo, and I mean, I just had an unfortunate circumstance where I got quite ill at the first go when I went down there. And, you know, being ill for 2 months in computer engineering down there is your term's done. You're either the super genius or
yeah.
And I have to say, I was at the bottom of the rung for getting into the program. I mean, I had a 90 average. I didn't have the 99 averages that so many of the students.
So 90
had.
Was the bottom rung, and
yeah.
that was back in 1998. Imagine where it's at now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I mean, this is where things are at. Going through that, I ended up going back the following year. I ended up withdrawing and just saying, you know, I didn't have a fair shake at
yeah.
it. I want to have a fair shake at it. And I think, you know, again, in that one-track mind, and that's, you know, we get back to that other comment where, you know, it's important to sort of think laterally and sort of step back and have a broader perspective. I didn't really step back and say, is this really what I want to do? Did I really enjoy it? I sort of attributed to my experience to the illness. I attribute it to just, you know, the workload that was going on. During the time that I had off, I went and worked because I was working at TVO during high school. Then I was working as an independent
Yes.
IT consultant for a few companies. So I was sort of always multitasking. And then all of a sudden I got shoved into this really high-paced, hardcore engineering program. Going back, I went there and just, yeah, it was like pulling teeth. I wasn't prepared because I didn't study when I was, you know, had the 8 months off. So, I mean, I really put myself behind the eight ball on that one. I just didn't enjoy it. And the penny dropped for me that this wasn't the right move when a woman by the name of June Lowe, who ran ran the WEEF lab down there and was one of the professors, we were walking in the hall one day and she said, you know, this type of learning environment is for a particular type of student. You know, you're not a failure if you don't align with this.
Yes.
And that's when the penny dropped and I sort of went, yeah, this really isn't me. This hardcore academic with, like, they have their co-op program, but this, we're without that sort of day-to-day pragmatic. I started learning that too, even going to the labs. I'd be the first one in the lab, first one out of the lab, and it would be simple to use a breadboard and figure out what needed to be done and write up the paper. But when it was hardcore calculus, it was a totally different world, right?
But it's interesting to hear the influence of other people. Again, mm-hmm. like there are these little moments that happen in our careers and lives, like this conversation that you had with this prof. And she says something that really profoundly gets to you, like you get it. And
yeah.
you didn't get it prior to the conversation.
Yeah.
And you might have said to yourself, I can't quit because I'll be a failure and I need to do the challenge and all those stories that you're telling yourself until she kind of interrupts that circuit.
Yeah, exactly.
So how was it to leave then after that?
Well, I mean, yeah, I didn't leave willfully. I left because my marks weren't where they needed to be. I was pretty neurotic about it afterwards. I mean,
yeah.
this was the first thing that I'd done in life that I hadn't succeeded at. And I mean, it was success after success after success.
So hang on now, if listeners are experiencing some resonance with that
yeah.
and maybe they've had lots of successes in their life and they hit a failure
yeah.
and it becomes really hard. You have to deal with that and it shakes your sense of self.
There can be emotional and mental sort of even trauma from not experiencing, you know,
yes.
from things not going the way you expect them to go. And I've had friends who have had that happen to them where they've thought they had the world by, you know,
there were, you know, a grip on the world, and they were moving forward. And then all of a sudden, you know, things just didn't pan out, and their sort of whole life plan is shattered. And yeah, it can really impact you, and it impacted me.
Right. So what happened? So you had that impact, and yet here you are. So there's life after a failure like that, yeah. Even though it's not a failure. How did you pick yourself up and move forward?
Lots of time, and also putting myself in a position to succeed. And I'd also say as well, too, I mean, I sort of went back to the grassroots, back to the things that were working for me. And I remember I went back to Don Mills, drove over one day, you know, near the end of the day, and,
yes.
and tracked down one of those teachers and walked with him in the hall after he had finished his class. And he said, you know, I really never understood why you went to Waterloo. You know, like you've got the human skills, you know, you're technical, but I mean, you're not a human calculator. So, you know, I always thought you should do something that would, you know, that you really enjoyed and that you were passionate about. And that's sort of when it sort of clicked again. I used to come home from high school when I was in Don Mills, and I'd sit and watch the markets close during the tech boom. And I was just upset, you know, amazed with the business world.
So again, another influence, this time a high school teacher, years after you graduated high school.
Yeah.
You go back and he says, you know, do what you're good at, basically.
Yeah. Do what you're good at, do what you have a passion for. And so then I start looking and finding out, and that's actually funny. The same individual who introduced me to the cyber arts program had started a new program at Ryerson, which was a combination of business and IT. And all of a sudden I said, hold on a second, business and IT, this is exactly what I do. So started, you know, basically went and started doing that and started back into the IT consulting.
So you did the degree at Ryerson?
Did the degree at Ryerson.
This is like the IT BCom or something?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, it's an IT management BCom where they focus on aligning. If I can say it's a little bit of a higher level, they're focusing on aligning IT with business needs.
So that would be the Ted Rogers School of Management at Ryerson University,
yes, now,
in case
yeah.
listeners are interested in that one.
Yeah, that's correct.
Great. We're talking to Matthew Held here, CEO of Manawa Networks. He's giving us the arc of his career story here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM. Matthew, we time flies here, and we have a few minutes, and I want to move forward into
Definitely.
How all of this turned into the seed that has now eventually grown into this company that you have. Where was the seed planted?
Oh, a seed planted. I mean, I was, while in Ryerson, I was also working full time as an IT consultant. So it was scheduling customer visits between classes. So it was quite hectic, to say the least, and, you know, lost a lot of sleep doing it that way. And just recognized that there were a lot of challenges, in the IT consulting
yes.
world. And also really noticed that There's a certain stigma that IT guys are the sort of geeky, wearing glasses. They don't speak, they don't speak to the actual business people in a way that they understand, in a language they understand. It's all this tech jargon and
yes.
whatnot. And that's sort of where we said, you know, it doesn't need to be like that. It really, you know, we wanted to bring customer experience, to the IT world. And really empower those business users and let them feel, at peace with their technology and confident with the technology.
Yes.
Not that this was this, mystical, black box that we need it, but we really don't know how it works and we're not confident with it. So we really set out to create that. And I use the term every now and then that we're almost like technology psychologists. You know, people will work themselves up into a frenzy when the printer doesn't work, or they can't get their email, or they have the report due, and they really just need, you almost have to calm them down and empathize with them and say, look, it's not you, it's okay, but there's a reason why this is happening, and then work them through the technology, and at the same point in time, impart your knowledge on them and share with them why this is happening. Teach them a little bit along the way so that they don't feel like they're just, completely left out in the dark, and it starts to build that confidence for them, we find.
So the technology consultants, technology psychologists, that's an interesting mm-hmm. way to put it. So it's the human face
Definitely.
On this technology piece. So, how is that played out in your company? Like, we have this array of IT consultants, and then there's you guys leading the company. How does that make it different for both the client and the consultants?
Well, and really what it boils down to, because we're outsourced, I mean, we really want to be that one-stop shop, and we really want to be the CIO, CTO of the company. We want to work with those business leaders and really own their IT from start to finish. So we're helping them with strategic decisions and you know, which direction they should go in terms of purchasing. And then, you know, it's really, and this is, again, sort of where you step up from being just an IT techie to an IT consultant, where you're actually looking at their business as if it was your own, and what would you do?
And are you guys doing that in the leadership, or are you empowering your consultants to go and do that with their clients?
We're empowering our consultants to do that with their clients. I mean, they each, there's such a fantastic relationship built between our consultants and the customers, and they're really treated like family within that relationship.
So you're giving them, you're actually building their skills in a way to add this psychologist perspective to the technology. They're good in technology. So when you hire people, do you look for people with the technology that you can train, or do you look for people who are more the people kind of skills and train them on the technology?
It's I would say it's a combination of the two. I mean, you have to have some technology skills. You can't, you know, show up without having any of that. But I would say that attitude has to trump technical skill. To a certain degree with that. I mean, no matter how brilliant somebody might be with technology, if they don't have the right attitude, we don't find they're as successful.
Right on. And if people do want to find out more about Manawa Networks, where do they go?
They go to our website, which is www.manawa.net. Just M-A-N as in Nancy, A, and then W-A.net. If any listeners want to, I mean, they can feel free to send me an email. My email address is mheld@manawa.net.
Last question briefly, Matthew, from your personal experience and the changes that have happened in your career, what can you share with listeners about what you've learned about making life, career and life choices?
Well, simply put, you know, the path that you will end up taking isn't always evident when you start, and that being persistent and just having the right attitude and being willing to do whatever it takes and just being a team player and supporting people really, and having great mentors really are the things that you want to be able to do, because you'll find that people will come into your life and will work with you in order to help share and their insight, their experience, and also link you to new opportunities that you wouldn't have otherwise had.
Great, great advice. Matthew Held, thanks so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Career Buzz, the unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Here on CIUT 89.5 FM, I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com. Two other hosts of Career Buzz are Leanne Sachs at livinginthemoment.ca and Louisa Jewell at positivematters.com. If you have comments or questions on today's show, please email me. It's mark@careercycles.com. Thanks to my guests, Matthew Held, Ben Gould. Technical production today was by Julian Dunn. An MP3 of today's show is available from the Career Buzz link on